Many supplements on the market are hard to absorb or packed with fillers, but that's not the case with Quiksilver Scientific. Quiksilver Scientific is a U.S.-based company that manufactures advanced liposomal supplements, making nutrients easier for your body to absorb and put to work quickly. Made in Colorado in an NSF GMP-certified facility and rigorously tested, this is science-first supplementation. After adding ultravitamin into my routine, recovery feels faster and I don't hit that midday crash anymore. Trusted worldwide for supplements that truly make a difference in performance, resilience, and well-being. Quiksilver Scientific makes advanced liposomal supplements so you can actually feel the difference. Energy, focus, calm, recovery. Get 10% off plus free shipping at tryqs.com/podcast. That's tryqs.com/podcast. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Mm-hmm. Both of these stories have everything that the Democrats don't want to discuss. Let's say relaxed immigration, like really relaxed, like super yoga relaxed, okay? Yeah. And this particular situation with Minnesota is the social safety net and how it ended up being abused.
Well, and specifically now, taking from children who are hungry, which is like, that was just a topic of conversation last month. That was just the topic of conversation, how like Republicans want to steal food from starving babies. Well, if we're going to talk about that, let's go ahead and talk about Minnesota.
Welcome to Rivera and Reeves, the podcast where we break through the bias, report the news, and occasionally trip over our soapboxes while ranting about the headlines.
Every week, we tackle the biggest stories with sharp analysis, unfiltered honesty, and just enough sarcasm to keep it fun.
So pull up a chair, grab your coffee, and join us as we wade through the spin because the media is trash and we have zero patience for their nonsense.
Hey, friends, welcome back to another episode of Rivera and Reeves. I'm Miss Sadie, and I'm here with my friend Rachel. Say hello, Rachel.
Hello, Rachel.
We're back.
We're back
from our Thanksgiving break. Like, we're here for like a hot minute because then we're going to disappear for a month.
We need a break. It's like, this job is crazy.
Yep. Well, okay. So before we get started, first of all, if you get our newsletter in the morning of the news brief yesterday and today, I forgot to take out the fact that we were going to take the week off. So if you were confused as to like, why are they on? Well, it's because I missed that edit. So my bad. We're here.
Surprise.
So we're going to be here today and also on Thursday. And then we will be taking the rest of the year off, and then we'll be back the first Tuesday of January, which is January 5th. No, 6th. Wait,
Hold on. January 6th. Yeah, January 6th. It's Epiphany. That's Epiphany. My daughter's baptismal birthday, too. She was baptized on Epiphany.
So, because we were going to try and do shows still like through the holiday, but between both of us traveling, kid commitments, church commitments, it was just, we just admitted that there's only two of us and we can only do so much. So we're going to enjoy the holiday, but we are here today and Thursday. And let me tell you, the news does not stop, even for Turkey Day.
Like, yeah, there's plenty to talk about.
I was actually trying to collect the stories this morning, and I'm like, not only is it collecting the amount of stories that we could possibly discuss, but it seems like everything that has hit the news recently is like an extended storyline where it has multiple developments. It's not just like a single headline that's like in and off the cycle.
Yeah.
They're kind of stretching.
They got legs to them. They have some life. They're not just going away in a 24-hour cycle. That's for sure.
No. So we're going to try and touch on all of them. Did you have a good Thanksgiving?
I had a wonderful Thanksgiving. It was really nice. And we just threw away the last of the leftovers. I don't know what the rule is. I'm sure the FDA or the USDA or someone has some kind of guideline about how long you're supposed to keep turkey in your fridge. But we were still eating casserole this afternoon for lunch. I thought we threw all of it away yesterday, but we found some hidden. We're like, let's do this.
One of my favorite things for like breakfast is what I call like a Thanksgiving hash. You know, you take some stuffing, toast it in the skillet, add some sausage, crack an egg over it.
Yes, it's delicious. Yeah, we're living on the edge a little, you know, 5 days later, but it was a wonderful day. Church, friends over that night. And to be honest, everybody was gone and my house was clean by 8:30 p.m.
Awesome.
And to me, that is a Christmas miracle. And so I took it and I was so happy because the next day we hit the ground running decorating for Christmas. So I needed.
I can see that with the tree behind you. It's beautiful. Like, and
this is only one of multiple trees in our house that has been. This is the kids' tree. They put all of their ornaments on it from all the years. So,
well, I have done no Christmas decorating. I got back from camp and we hit the ground running with errands and plans and things that need to get done. And I have yet to force my husband up into the attic to drag the tree and the decorations down. And honestly, sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. So it's up in the air. We'll see what happens.
Yep.
But let's talk about what are we discussing before we get started with today's episode. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Apologies, we'll be gone in 2 days. However,
or a month. So,
sorry. We have plenty in the archives, which I would recommend and I would encourage you to explore. Also, don't forget to hit that follow button no matter where you're listening, be it on a podcast, be it on Substack or on YouTube, because we also come up on YouTube the following day. For our paying subscribers, you get the video a day early and you get the podcast a few hours early before anybody else. Otherwise, you got to wait until the next day on YouTube if you want to watch our beautiful faces talk about the news.
Yes.
But there is a link in the show notes for all of that. What are we talking about today? This is what we're going to try and hit. Okay. We're going to try and.
It's a lot.
There is a lot going on. All right. A little bit of an update on the shooting on Thanksgiving Eve of the National Guard members in DC. The Minnesota fraud scandal that has.
Actually started
a week early and then blew up because it started first with Chris Rufo at the City Journal and his reporting on it. And then the New York Times picked it up for some reason and it blew it up.
Yeah. Why did the New York Times? I mean, we'll talk about that, but that seems like a very interesting story. Like all of a sudden journalism, what is it?
They're actually close the New York Times. New Year's resolution. Yeah. They did even some extra journalism zing also on another story, which so right now Hegseth is embroiled in some speculative scandal about a two strike. How do I describe this? It's like double tap gate, essentially, where I think that's how I'll describe it. But it's like one of these narco traffic boats was hit twice. There's some we'll go into the details about it.
Yeah.
Okay. And how the New York Times actually did some journalisming. Honestly,
wonders never cease. Wow.
And if anyone is in Tennessee, we're also going to talk a little bit about the Tennessee special election, specifically because it's literally all over the news right now, especially the Democrat candidate and what this could, why everybody's so interested in it. So that is going to be our goal. Fingers crossed we hit all these stories today.
We'll see. We'll see.
Because, you know, we're so disciplined here.
We're a little chatty. It's been a while. We'll see what we can do.
I know. I didn't. Actually, it was we did the Thanksgiving vacation. I don't think you and I, we texted back and forth maybe once or twice and then came back from Christmas break. And I'm like, I miss you. Where are you?
And I sent a falling down emoji saying, I am so tired.
She's like shocked. She's like, excuse me, who are you? What's your name?
Why are you having feelings right now, Masady? Why are you showing emotions? This is weird.
Okay. This is going to be a hard pivot because we were just laughing. But the day before Thanksgiving, there was a shooting in D.C. So two West Virginia National Guard members, it was Sarah Buckstorm, who was 20, and Staff Sergeant Andrew Wolf, who was 24, were shot in an ambush just blocks from the White House. Beckstorm, unfortunately, she succumbed to her injuries. She was rushed to the hospital. She did go under, I think she had surgery and everything, but she didn't make it. I don't even know she made it a full 24 hours after she came out of surgery, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Wolf right now is in critical condition, but he gave some, like a thumbs up yesterday. He's giving signs of recovery. So continue to keep him in your prayers. The suspect was immediately apprehended. Actually, the reports are that another National Guard member who I think took him down with a pocket knife that he had on him. And another one was able to pull his firearm also and shot him. So he was taken away. He His name is, let me try this. Okay.
No, see, I didn't even try. On the Dawn Dispatch this morning, I said, I will not. You will have to go read it because I cannot do it.
Well, his last name looks like Luckenwall. Let's go with Luckenwall, okay. Right?
Yeah, pretty sure that's
29, Afghan national, drove from, he was in Washington State, drove mm-hmm. all the way to Washington, D.C. So yep, literally across the country, to yep. execute this attack. Now, what do we know about this guy so far is that he was actually, while in Afghanistan, on the CIA's Elite Zero Unit, which is mm-hmm. Afghan counterterrorism forces in Kandahar. He entered the U.S. September 8th of 2021. We all remember that on September 11th was the withdrawal from Afghanistan. That
mm-hmm. disaster.
The disaster from the Biden's withdrawal from Afghanistan. That yep. ended with the, included the death of, was it 13 or 16 service members that died at Abbey Gate? I can't, I think it was 16.
13.
It was 13?
I believe so. Correct us if we're wrong.
He came over under Biden's Obama allies welcome and underwent, mm-hmm. this is the reports, extensive CIA vetting, annual security checks, and was granted asylum in April of this mm-hmm. year by the Trump administration after he applied in 2024.
Okay.
So that's how he got here. Mm-hmm. Now, during that time, it appears like volunteers, for example, that were treating him because he was showing signs of PTSD raised alarms in January 2024 with emails saying that he was exhibiting manic episodes, mm-hmm. taking unexplained cross-country trips, family reported combat PTSD, isolation, and apparently he had a commander friend that died in 2024, but the friend was in Afghanistan. And that friend was denied U.S. asylum. And so some people are speculating that that precipitated his mental health issues.
Yeah.
But as of right now, we don't know. Like, the reports are that he was acting alone. The reports are also that it sounds, I think it was, if I'm not mistaken, I am pretty sure I have Secretary Noem was asked about, like, what was his situation? Was he vetted and radicalized before he mm-hmm. came here?
Yeah.
Which would, you know, bring into question his vetting. Or was he radicalized
once
domestically?
Yeah. Yeah.
So Christy Noem was asked about this. Let me play that for everybody here.
Mm-hmm. We believe he was radicalized since he's been here in this country. We do believe it was through connections in his home community and state. And we're going to continue to talk to those who interacted with him, who were his family members, talk to them. So far, we've had some participation, but anyone who has information on this needs to know that we will be coming after you and we will bring you to justice. We absolutely will persecute you because we do know that we will never allow this to continue to happen in our country. Allow individuals who came to our country that were unvetted by Joe Biden, allowed to run free and loose. We are going to bring them to justice and make sure that they're returned out of this country if they aren't here for the purposes of being an American.
So first of all, I think she meant prosecute, not persecute.
I caught that too. I was like, we're going to persecute you? I was like,
yeah.
And I think I'll make another observation that is completely not related, but I just have to say something. I find it interesting that whenever she does these speaking engagements or whatever, whether it's an interview or she's doing like one of the ads that you see on Fox News mainly about deportations, her tone is the same regardless. So she's just like, yeah, I went shopping for milk today. And if I catch you and you're here illegally, we will prosecute and put you in jail. And then she just kind of moves along opposed to Pam Bondi. Everything is at like an 11.
Yes. Yeah.
Which
it's it's interesting. There's not whole lot of fluctuation depending on the severity of the topic being discussed. I think the problem with this situation specifically is that it's very easy and kind of a knee-jerk reaction for almost everybody to assume and place blame on the opposing quote-unquote team when something so horrible like this happens and not try to wait for a moment to leave room for nuance, because the truth is that this did happen after. No one's going to argue that Biden's withdrawal wasn't a disaster, obviously. I mean, that's unequivocal. Democrats say that. But also, we don't know exactly if he was radicalized there or here. If he was radicalized here, that is a very damning situation for our culture and our country because of how many people have been let in just under that same provision that he was allowed in. And in 2020, you know, I had a friend who is a veteran write on Substack about this very thing yesterday, saying there are very few people who wouldn't have been at least sympathetic to the people being left in Afghanistan who had worked with soldiers, who had worked with the U.S. military, and who wouldn't have said, yeah, you know, they've worked with us. They're friendly with us. Let them in, you know, under these horrible situation being handed back to the Taliban under Joe Biden. And now that it's happening this moment and we can reflect and go, well, he was brought in under Biden. It's just very easy for us to say, well, it's Biden's fault then, as opposed to looking at the whole story holistically and going, it's just not as easy as we want it to be in this situation. That doesn't mean it's not awful. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't be deporting people. It doesn't mean that we shouldn't be vetting people continuously. We need to be doing that. But there's lots more to this than just he was brought in under Biden's watch. This is Biden's fault.
And in that was a Meet the Press interview over on, like, you know, during the Sunday circuit. Mm-hmm. Kristen Welker pushed her on that. She was like, well, wasn't he granted asylum by the Trump administration April of 2025?
After there were alarms brought up.
Correct. So, and she was kind of dodgy on answering that question, which, I mean, of course, you're not surprised. It's to be expected. But, you know, I think there's a lot of things here. Because if you are radicalized or you're already a radical or, you know, and you manage to infiltrate and work within the CIA or even while you're working in the CIA, you become radicalized and you go through the vetting. Like that, to me, at least you can say, no, you cannot enter because you already have an existing problem. Now, if you look like you're okay, you pass all your vetting, and then you enter the United States, and then you become radicalized, that is a much, to me, much scarier issue.
Because what are we doing here? What are we doing here that is further escalating, tensions, problems, also just the way they were raised? Something that the columnist brought up in the piece I published yesterday was we are dealing with a mindset that is foreign to most Americans, even ones who serve in Afghanistan. When people go abroad and they serve in military in these types of war zones, they come back fundamentally changed. And some of them would definitely say, like, emotionally damaged in a way from what they saw. They're never to be the same. And they deal with horrible, horrible, all kinds of things, right? Veterans have to deal with so much psychological fallout from what they are called to do. Now imagine being a person who is raised and has only ever lived in that type of war zone. That's your entire life. We're dealing with a totally different type of person. And then they come here and then they're further radicalized in the country that they were assisting. It's a total mind warp that I don't think any of us civilians, even some soldiers, could understand when you're raised completely, like that's your only frame of reference. And so that's another part of it that I just don't think we can understand. But if they're radicalized here, that says a lot about pockets of our country that we're not even, people are saying there's pockets of these radicals in Washington State. I mean, they're everywhere all over the country, but that's crazy, right? Am I the only one
absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's absolutely concerning. And I think a lot of things that I've heard of the discussion of this particular individual is that they had a hard time assimilating. And I'm sure it has to do with that. Like, you come from a country, you're consistently at war, and then all of a sudden you're in Washington State where you can go down the street and grab a hamburger. Like, it's no big deal.
Right.
You know, you have to acclimate to our systems, our culture, how we work, how you make a living, how you associate with people. And even if a person has the best of intentions when they come here to the United States, culture shock is a real thing.
A real thing. Yep.
A real thing. And it can be a huge adjustment. And we're dealing with a person that can't just, like, go back. They have to go somewhere else that maybe is adjacent. And I think that's also the discussion that some people have had of whether, you know, I'm not questioning, like, look, if you're a threat to the United States, first, no entry in the beginning. And if you are not a citizen and you're here out of the goodness of our heart and you become a problem, goodbye.
Okay. Yeah, and there's like red flags. Things are being.
Goodbye. Like,
yeah. Yes, this is not.
No issue with that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would be more concerned about, like, where are others who have, who came here initially, maybe on good intentions, because we're always being told, like, you know, we can't demonize everybody, good intentions. But that also doesn't mm-hmm. mean that you can't continue to vet them, because right. people are capable of changing, and mm-hmm. change could manifest in this way. And you just right. have to come to the realization is that if this is what ends up happening, they need to go.
Yeah. Like, that, it's not people that want to act like that's not showing empathy. That's not being, what's the word? Hospitable. But our duty is not to be overly hospitable or compassionate to immigrants just simply because they're immigrants. That's not what we're supposed to be doing. Our task in front of us is to care first and foremost for the homeland and for our own citizens. And then we can follow that up with dealing lawfully with people who are seeking refuge and asylum. But there has to be some sort of, like, checks and balances here. You just can't let everyone in just because they're an immigrant and we want to be nice. Like, that's just not how any country works.
Yeah. Period. Well, for the time being, nobody's coming into the country, because after this happened and after the next story that we're about uh-huh. to cover came uh-huh. to surface, which was rampant abuses of fraud and stealing uh-huh. over $1 billion in taxpayer dollars from predominantly members of the Somali community in Minnesota.
Involving our, was almost,
almost
vice president of the United States. Holy moly, can you imagine?
First of all, I can't believe, like, I know, obviously, the legacy media right now is really fixated on the Hegseth boat situation, which
well,
we're
they have to
on.
Be. They have to be, because, I mean, this, like, is bad.
This, to me, is huge. First of all, mm-hmm. both of these stories have everything that the Democrats don't want to discuss.
Correct.
Immigration, or the risks of just, like, open, I don't want to say frivolous, but, like, relaxed, let's say relaxed uh-huh. immigration, like, really uh-huh. relaxed, like, super yoga relaxed. Okay. Yeah. Immigration, and also the, in this particular situation with Minnesota, is the social safety net and how it ended up being abused.
Well, and now, specifically taking from children who are hungry, which is, like, that was just a topic of conversation last month. Well, that was just the topic of conversation, how, like, Republicans want to steal food from starving babies. Well, if we're going to talk about that, let's go ahead and talk about Minnesota, because yes. that's what happened there. Like, for real.
Well, when both of these stories popped, like, happened basically at about the same time, the president mm-hmm. announced, no more asylum.
No
more immigration. We are shutting down for now, for the time being. I'm sure this is going to be challenged in some way. Okay. Uh-huh. But he made a very, very long Thanksgiving Day post. Yes.
He's not
where
happy.
He was muy, muy upset. Okay.
I think he's fed up just in general.
Just, like,
with a lot of stuff. He's just
had
done.
It. I can just imagine names. Him. Of course, like, he's not actually, but, like, I'm just picturing him, like, with his two yeah. little thumbs, like, angry. Yep. Typing mm-hmm. it. Of course, that's not what happens, that we saw from the documentary. He has mm-hmm. a woman that types everything out for him. But that's how I would like to picture it, is him angrily yeah. thumbing. Like,
have we ever met her? Like, is she at stuff? Why don't we see her in photos?
I'm not 100% sure. I'm assuming she's still there, but I'm not 100% sure she's still.
Someone, like, is there. What I'm yeah, saying, like, is, where is the, like, expose on his Twitter manager? Like, I want a story about that person. Where'd they come from? How'd they grow up? What do they do in their free time? I want to know. I want a house tour. Like, you, no, but that is the voice of the president of the United States. She
I also want to know, does she ever go, now, sir?
That's what I'm saying. I
let's
need a
think
book
about what we're
written,
saying.
I need a book written about this man or woman. You know what? I'm calling some people I know after this phone call, and we're going to get them
actually,
as an
you
interview.
Know what?
An interview.
If this person exists,
yes,
we should bring them on the podcast for an interview. I'm just saying.
For sure. Well, I mean, they'll never will, because if they're tweeting the president's thoughts, there's no chance they're giving an interview. But I'm finding out. I'm going to do some investigative journalism. I need to know.
Well, Okay. Well, speaking of investigative journalism, Minnesota, super scandal fraud situation. Okay. Federal prosecutors announced 59 convictions of over $1 billion of stolen taxpayer money across three schemes. Now, if you guys remember,
it's so crazy.
It is insane. Okay. Now, if you are one of our original listeners, we love you. Hello. You know how far we have come and how long we have been here. And you may also recall that at one point during the campaign, we talked about Tim Walz and how he was a governor that oversaw the biggest COVID fraud in the nation of $250 million stolen from pandemic meal programs for the Feed Our Future program. It was a big thing. Nobody wanted to talk about it because why? Why? Anybody? Any guess? Because he was potentially going to be the Democratic VP.
So it was hush, hush. Like, you can't do it. Don't bring it up. Like, bring it up after the election.
We know, but let's not talk about it too much. So that, everybody was already aware of that. That has already been discussed. Then it was like between Thanksgiving and before the New York Times did their report. So Christopher Rufo and Ryan Thorpe with the City Journal did a report. And in this report, they're discussing the fraud of the Somalis in Minnesota. And then they also bring up that some of these funds look like they could be getting to terrorist outlets like Al-Shabaab.
Great.
Which was kind of like a big deal, right?
Kind of.
Here's the article. I mean, yeah, I would consider it kind of like a big deal. Now, let me see. I think I had a... Yeah, so right here. It says... Now, he talks about the frauds. He talks about how families get into it, which we're going to discuss. But one of the things I wanted to feature in this particular article, because it's different from the rest of the reporting, was that the Somali fraud rings have sent huge sums in remittance to money transfers from Minnesota to Somalia. According to reports, an estimated 40% of households in Somalia get remittances from abroad. In 2023 alone, the Somali diaspora sent back $1.7 billion, more than the Somali government's budget for that year. Our investigation reveals, for the first time, that some of this money has been directed to an even more troubling destination, the Al-Qaeda-linked Islamic terror group Al-Shabaab. According to multiple law enforcement sources, Minnesota's Somali community has sent untold millions through a network of Hawalas, informal clan-based money traders that have wound up in the coffers of Al-Shabaab.
Wow.
Which is quite telling. Now, then the New York Times went and they did a report also. And in their report, they said that there's no evidence of this particular story. But interestingly, the Treasury Secretary has announced an investigation into the alleged ties to, it's not ties. So this is what he's saying. What he is saying is that there are individuals within the Somali community who still have either direct connections to Al-Shabaab or affiliated connections to Al-Shabaab. So maybe it's like they may not be friends or family members with a member, but maybe they're friends and family members with an individual who is contributing to the terrorist organization. Right. So they're not necessarily saying that it is directly funding, but that the way things run in Somalia, and because of the culture and the way things go, that they're taking taxpayer money, they're sending over $1 billion to Somalia, and that portions of that money is getting to Al-Shabaab.
Yeah.
And so the Treasury Secretary, based on this investigation, announced that they were going to be doing an investigation.
Well, and right before we started recording, I got a pop-up alert from, I think it was the New York Times, saying that the White House announced that they're going to target Minnesota with ICE, like see what's going down in the town there.
Absolutely. I mean, makes sense to me.
Yep. I have zero problems with that.
I'm like, that makes sense. So, well, then after the City Journal did their report, the New York Times came out with this report, which is like how fraud swamped Minnesota's social service system on Tim Walz's watch.
Yep.
Pointed their finger directly at Tim Walz.
Can you, do you think that if he had become the VP, do you think that this would have gotten published?
I don't know if it would have gotten published. I think it would have been buried at least. I don't know, because this has been bubbling up. What's disturbing about this is that how long this has kind of been, this has been bubbling up. Okay. Yeah. Because remember, this was an issue before he was elected.
Mm-hmm.
And I have another article I'm going to share that shows that it was an issue last year that was brought up. And mm-hmm. now we have the New York Times doing this reporting. And one of the particular things that I wanted to bring up in this report is a few things. So one, it says in one case, now we've already, so the Feed the Children pandemic COVID one,
yeah,
already was existing.
Yeah, that was already there.
Yes. Now, the New York Times report focuses on two additional frauds, which is housing stabilization and autism therapy. Mm-hmm. And this one in particular is talking about autism therapy, if both of them actually, but yeah. Mostly the autism therapy. It says, in one case, hundreds of providers were reimbursed for assistance they claim to have provided to people at risk for homelessness through federal authorities, though federal authorities said services weren't provided. Mm-hmm. The program's annual cost ballooned to more than $104 million last year, the authority said, from a budgeted projection of $2.6 million. So it was projected for $2.6, got up to $104, and nobody was really saying anything, okay?
Okay.
And then it says, in another program aimed to provide therapy for autistic children, prosecutors said providers recruited children in Minneapolis' Somali community, falsely certifying them as qualifying for autism treatment and paying their parents kickbacks for their cooperation.
Wow.
Which, I couldn't fathom. Because to me, it's like the other issue. It isn't just like, obviously, people are going to be corrupt, but it's yeah. that, oh, you mean we had this budgeted for 2.6 and we're, and you got up to $104 million?
Yeah. The oversight is just remarkable. Like, how does that even happen?
Yes. Well, what? So even in this article, they bring up, you're thinking like, how does this happen? Why would this be allowed? So later in the article, this brings up, it says, Mr. Thompson, a career prosecutor who served as interim U.S. attorney for several months this year and who declined to discuss his own political preferences, said he believed the race sensitivities that played a major role in the rise of fraud, that race sensitivities played a major role in the rise of fraud.
How does race sensitivity? Okay.
It says, as pandemic assistance was distributed, the state was also reeling from the killing of George Floyd by a Minneapolis uh-huh. police officer. And then this is a quote. This was a huge part of the problem, Mr. Thompson said during the interview in the summer. Allegations of racism can be a reputation or career killer. In other words, the concern was because the Somali community has become very big in Minneapolis. They become a huge voting bloc. They mm-hmm. vote predominantly Democrat.
Yep.
And so the big concern was, is that if we bring attention to the fact that we have this problem with the Somali community, we could be accused of racism.
Racism. Yeah. But this has been happening for years now where people aren't calling stuff out because they're afraid of being racist. At what point are we like, they're already calling us racist. So just like say the things.
I mean, we're talking about Democrats here.
And I understand that they, well, yeah. And I understand they don't want to lose their job and nobody wants to lose proximity to power, blah, blah, blah. But aren't there still some people that want to say this is a huge problem and it's a huge problem for the constituents that they're saying that they care about? Anyways,
Well, so Walz was asked about that. Walz, by the way, is running for governor again. Okay, so while all of this is
he cannot happen, right? He can't. He can't.
Are you asking me or telling me?
Both. I am pleading with level-headed Americans, Minnesotans, to please look. It's the same thing with like the Jay Jones situation. I wanted to believe that Democrats in Virginia would be like, okay, like I'll do a lot of things, but not on my watch. And yet they were like, okay, on my watch is fine. And I hope that that's not the same for Tim Walz, because the guy is, I mean, he's pretty mired in corruption at this point. Plus, I mean, his state's just not doing good. Like,
no,
I mean, what are we doing here?
His defense on this, for me, has been the most interesting aspect of it, especially considering that this is happening all on his watch.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, remember, which did I pull this up? One of the things that happened in conjunction with all this, okay,
yeah,
was an ex post from a account called, let me see if I have it here.
Oh, the Health and Human Services employees.
Yes. So it was listed as Minnesota Department of Health and Human Services employees.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, it wasn't that official account. A lot of people thought it was the official account. And it said in the bio, 450 employees, this is their account. So the official Minnesota DHS account is separate from this one. So one is a government one. This is run by separate individuals who are whistleblowers within the Minnesota government system, who are specifically pointing the finger at Walz and saying that he was brushing this under, and not only was he brushing this under the rug, but apparently he was also attacking whistleblowers for coming forward with this information.
Yeah.
So he was undermining them, punishing them, you know, using all of the systems in place to kind of, you know.
So they started posting yesterday and it was getting tons of traction.
Has been up for a while, but they had this very long post, which I can't read the whole thing here, honestly, because it's so, like, we don't have time for it. But in this post, which went viral, it says, fundamentally, Tim Walz is dishonest, lacks ethics and integrity, has poor leadership abilities, and has never taken any accountability for his role in the fraud. Instead, Tim Walz deflects by blaming national politics for his own failures and distracts the public with inventive lying. Okay. I mean, look at this thing. This thing...
Yeah.
Is a whole testimony.
Well, and they not only did that, they also responded to like Kamala Harris post from what, a year and a half ago, something like that. Pretty, you know, pretty clear in their opinions.
And this has reached almost 40 million views down
here. It was being retweeted by everybody last night. And then I went to go find it to put in the Dawn Dispatch, and they had suspended their account.
They were temporarily suspended because they ended up having to change their name because people were confusing them with, or allegedly they were given a strike for impersonating an official account.
Okay.
And so then they went and they changed their name to Minnesota State Fraud Reporting Commentary. And then they were given their account back. So they are back and running, but that's why X took them down initially, because I guess they got reported probably by the Minnesota DHS as being like a false impersonating account. And so they were temporarily down for like maybe a day or a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
But this was going nuts. So Tim Walz is asked about, of course, all of this. Let's listen to Timmy.
Yeah.
Dozens of people of East African descent have been charged, convicted, and sentenced for stealing more than $1 billion in taxpayer money from government programs during COVID. As you know, Governor, that is more than Minnesota spends each year to run its Department of Corrections. So I want to give you a chance to respond to this. Do you take responsibility for failing to stop this fraud in your state?
Well, certainly I take responsibility for putting people in jail. Governors don't get to just talk theoretically. We have to solve problems. And I will note, it's not just Somalis. Minnesota is a generous state. Minnesota is a prosperous state, a well-run state. We're AAA bond rated, but that attracts criminals. Those people are going to jail. We're doing everything we can. But to demonize an entire community on the actions of a few, it's lazy.
No,
that's
a bad response.
First of all,
without answering the question.
Well, I mean, did I misunderstand, or is he basically saying, did he say we are a generous state and we're very well run?
And because that's why it attracts fraud.
Yes.
Like, maybe your
fraud
is overly generous to the fraudsters, and you should handle your fraud problem, Tim, also, when he said, yeah, I'll take responsibility for putting people in jail, it's like, no, the buck stops with you. It's like how you call for President Trump to be, you know, take responsibility for everything bad that goes in America. Well, Minnesota's like your little mini country. You're in charge. Take responsibility and stop trying to placate everybody's feelings. Like it's very clear who did this. It's the motives seem pretty clear as well. Just say the thing. Say, yeah, this happened on my watch. I'm really disappointed. And I'm going to bring everybody I can to justice.
Well, thank you. I mean, he can't point, you know, he can't look. Okay. Let's say, I think that the most recent convictions, which were 59 of the 59, 51 of them were Somali.
So vast majority. So yeah, it's pretty.
So it seems pretty appropriate technically to say. You can't demonize an entire. Okay. Of course they need some assistance.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's just interesting that his concern, first of all, he says that he puts people in jail, okay, after they've been exposed.
Yeah.
Clearly, you are more concerned with not calling. To me, it just seems like he's more concerned with not calling out the community because they're a huge voting bloc. And yeah. He doesn't want to be accused of racism. And especially, you know, I mean, think about how he managed Minnesota following George Floyd.
It was on
and
fire.
So now, all of a sudden, now you're going to be tough on crime and fraud because you're running for reelection.
Right. And talk like, about how great of a place it is to live. It's triple bond rated. Like, okay, you can tell people that. Nobody knows what that means. And they just know that your state is mismanaged for the last 5 years. It was on fire for one whole summer. And now there's a huge fraud case.
Not funny.
Well, it's not funny, but it's true. And,
well, I found this interesting article, because remember, I've mentioned, like, we've known this for a minute, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, and he's also, there's this big concern because, you know, he wants, the picture here is Trump, Republicans, racist, right?
Yes.
How dare they point out the problem.
The obvious
issue with this that's happening within the Minnesota
data.
Somali community.
How dare you talk about the data?
How dare you notice? Okay.
Yeah.
This article that I want to share, which I know you have not seen,
mm-mm,
is an opinion piece from the Minnesota Reformer, which is a progressive news outlet, commentary outlet in Minnesota.
Okay.
And this was done July of 2024.
Mm-hmm.
The gentleman that wrote this, what is his exact title? I think he heads up at the DH, like the Minnesota DHS.
He was a fraud investigator for the Minnesota AG. Yeah.
Okay. So I want to share some highlights to this particular article. So one being where he himself is Somali.
Mm-hmm.
And he is talking about the feed our children future fraud is his focus here. But he's acknowledging that fraud is becoming a major issue in Minnesota. And in this particular article, he is calling out his own community.
Yeah.
The Somali community. So he says, our system of Quran, which is, he's talking about the Somali system of Quran, which is a cultural system where it's kind of like how churches will have a fund and they'll gather money together to help people in need. So that's done also within the Somali community. It says, provides a social safety net in the form of financial assistance to those who have fallen on hard times. Unfortunately, it has been used to financially support people who have been charged with defrauding the government. Funds raised by the community have gone towards paying bills and expensive legal bills incurred by fraudsters.
Bail. That's even worse.
This assistance from the community has reduced the stigma once associated with criminality and enabled fraudsters to offload onto others the financial costs associated with their crimes. Fraudsters have also sought to exploit the begrudging political power of the Somali community, and the feckless fear of the establishment politicians and state agencies show when confronted with charges of racism and Islamophobia. So that, again, aligns with what we've been talking about. Like, this whole thing was like, we can't. It's like, I mean, first of all, it is like peak Minnesota nice Democrat.
Yes.
you know, where they don't want to ruffle any feathers. And this isn't a knock on Minnesotans. Like, it's great that Minnesotans are nice and they want to be polite. Like, that's an awesome thing. But when you combine that with, like, Democrat policies,
yeah,
and political motivations and an election, I think it's kind of a perfect formula to develop a problem, especially if you don't want to be, you know, you're also dealing with a group of people who know, especially considering the climate, that to be called racist is a tool in order for you to keep getting, you know, help, assistance, or not to be questioned. And he's calling it out right here. Later in the article, he says, during my time at the office of the attorney general, I witnessed some members of my community who were under investigation by our office brazenly level false accusations of discrimination against my colleagues. Rather than retain an attorney or argue their case in court, some sought out the attorney general at public events. Others reached out to Somali elected officials. Members of my community must cease the leveraging of race and religion to avoid accountability, and Minnesota's mostly DFL politicians must better muster the courage to address the systemic fraud in our publicly funded programs. And then, you know, goes off to say, basically, cut it out.
Yes.
We need to. It says, I mean, the last line goes, of course, as long as there are people who possess the desire and opportunity to commit fraud, fraud will occur. And I implore my fellow Somalis to respect the law. So I think at the end of the day, what we're dealing, I think these two stories are interesting because it shows the challenges of immigration, unvetted immigration, chain immigration, and also when there isn't assimilation. I mean, recently, who was the guy that was running for mayor in one of the Minnesota, was it in Minneapolis that he was running for mayor?
Yeah, I don't remember his name, but
he lost and he was Somali. And the reports are that he lost because of
warring tribal
conflicts, not necessarily so much because of the politics of the situation, but because of the dynamics within the community of clan against clan.
Yeah. Well, and I think it shows kind of how far from the mark we actually have gone to where we're even having a discussion where people are being called out by their fellow people within their own tribe as Somalis and not Americans. So then the greater question is, how many of these people who are committing fraud are actually dual citizens? Are they American citizens now, or are they just living here? And if it's this huge growing group of people who are taking over different cities, and they're not even necessarily American citizens, they're just, you know, asylum seekers or, you know, legal migrants, but they're not, it's highlighting the problem with no assimilation. They're creating new little countries within our country that are run differently. Huge cities are being handed over to a totally different groupthink than the American way of life. And what do we say about that? What do we think about that?
Well, and I think, you know, the issue too is that for far too long, making that observation ended up with
you're a racist.
Accusations of racist. And
yeah.
Interestingly, it only goes one way. If a bunch of, like, I can't tell you how many reports I have seen of Americans who are like, I don't know, flooding to Mexico City, for example, and Mexico City or even Spain or something along those lines. And these countries being upset about that, protesting it, wanting them to go back to their country, air quote, you know, for Americans to go back to their country. And it doesn't go both ways. I don't fault Spain or Mexico wanting to, like, look, you can come here, you can come live here, but you must assimilate here. You must become aware. It's so funny to me. Like, liberals talk so much about being respectful of everybody's culture, except ours. Like, except American culture. Like, that's the only culture it's like, we don't need to be accepting of. In fact, well, we need to do
the idea of assimilation. Yeah, the idea of assimilation to them is racist because it's saying we as Americans believe our culture is what we want to preserve and it's important to us. They read that as we as Americans believe our culture is superior to yours, therefore you must become like us. And sure, there's people
obviously there's people
like something that. But I do believe that my country is worth preserving, the culture, the traditions, and you will not preserve that if you have an open border, if you have no terms of assimilation that people have to rise to, whether it's know the language or it could be all variety of things. But the fact that we can't even say, yeah, I kind of want to keep American culture and tradition, and there is an American culture and tradition, and we're not going to be able to if we're just deciding that the compassionate thing to do is to allow anybody from anywhere in the world to come here and practice their religion, their ideas of how a culture and a democracy and a government are run everywhere in major cities all over our country. We won't we'll cease to have a country. I don't understand why that's racist. It's not racist. That's why it doesn't bother me anymore when people tell me I am, because it's not.
It's like, okay.
And that's what we're seeing here. And if you dare to say, why are they being called Somalis? Why aren't they being called Americans? Are they Americans? If they're Americans, they're Americans. And if they're not, and it's a whole city full of Somalis, well, let's talk about that. Do we have a problem with that? Because I kind of have a problem with that. But
yeah,
I'm sorry.
I mean, I have a problem with it if you're not assimilating. Absolutely. I would have a problem. Like, I just don't think this should be scandalous. And I think
it's not.
What I find most interesting here, too, like if I were to add another layer to this discussion before we move on. Uh-huh. Minnesota, that Midwest area, was settled, or the communities that relocated there initially were Scandinavian in nature, Dutch. You know, it's why they kind of have that funny little accent and everything like that. And it's also one of the reasons that they have such a robust social safety net in a lot of those states, because they brought that over with their culture from the Scandinavian countries to these regions of the United States. And there is also why they're so Minnesota nice. They're all very like assimilating. They're all very similar. And so I find it very interesting that then you go and you inject a community from a completely different, like not only American, but just
the other side of the world that does not think at all like we think about religion, about like, you know, family,
about community,
about
community,
like the way about how government is supposed to run. I mean, we could not be more different. We could not be more different. And
well, especially government, because their government, like they focus a lot more on clan dynamics versus we will use more government structure dynamics.
Well, and also individuality, which is why, which is also worth asking. You know, many of them, too, Somalis, I think of, you know, people in Congress who speak on behalf of Somalis about how wonderful it is to be Somali and Somalia this and Somalia that. And it's like, well, why are you all here then? Why are you? I don't see large groups of Americans fleeing to Somalia because their democracy is so fantastic. And I'm saying this not to be snarky. I'm saying it because we need to be asking these questions. I think it's important because it's not just happening in Minnesota. And look at Dearborn. And people keep saying these are small pockets, but they're small pockets until they're not. And even two major cities or two cities in our country is too many to be taken over.
Well, I mean, I think the whole small pockets excuse was used for a long time in the UK and Europe and stuff like that. And now they have a whole other situation.
Right.
Like, let's just be honest here. So, all right. Well, moving on, I do want to talk a little bit about the Tennessee special election. So this is District 7, a special election. We got the Democrat is Afton Bain and the Republican, who honestly, I did not really even, and first of all, it's not my district.
Okay.
But
so
also,
you can't.
Like, he's just not getting the coverage, right? So the Trump-backed Republican is Matt Van Epps, who's apparently, I think he's in the National Guard right now, but he's a vet, he's a Christian, he's a father, he's a business owner. He is like peak Tennessee Republican.
Right.
Yeah.
But tell me about this young lady. Tell me about this young lady.
Now, Afton Bain is...
What a name, too. That sounds like she should be
she
a coastal
like
elite.
The Bain
like, she should be... Yeah, she should be, though, on, like, the coast. She should be in Massachusetts, Vermont, something like that. That's what that name... I don't know.
So, now, this is a big deal because this particular district, Trump won it by plus 20, like, 22 points.
That's a huge margin. Wow.
So it shouldn't even be close. But special elections, we all know, if you guys are listeners here and if you're into politics, you know special elections are special.
Yeah,
they're weird.
They are. They can go all over the place. You don't know what's going to happen.
Yep. Especially because if you think like, oh, it's a for sure Republican state or
no, don't ever say that.
People,
that's when you're going to lose.
Guard down. They're like, oh, it's fine. And then Afton Bain goes, what's up?
Blows everything up. Yep.
So some of the highlights on Lady Bain. Okay. She was on a podcast where she declared, I hate Nashville. Uh-huh. She's asked about this. She's made anti-family statements, as in she did not want to be a mother. What she wants is power. I have clips. We'll share some of these
Please
clips.
Please play those. Yeah, play
and
that
one.
And
then also she's talked about defunding the police. Let's do a grab bag. I don't even know exactly what. I know this is Afton. I'm not sure which one it is. Let's see what she has to say.
My therapist always asks me to transcribe my dreams when they happen. And the recurring dream I've had is standing up in a cafeteria full of women. I don't know why I was there or whatever. And saying, I don't want children. I want power. And just screaming it at the top of my lungs. And for someone who grew up with my mother telling me never have kids because you will, you know, you'll have to give up a lot. You'll have to sacrifice professionally, which is what she was saying. And
who says that to their kid?
Where I am now with seeing the consequences and the ramifications of women having kids and being in the political field and what they're able to achieve, because we don't offer, you know, it's like the political field hasn't met the challenge of working moms. They really haven't. But also the deeply patriarchal structures that these women are involved with because they've chosen marriage and they've chosen to raise children. And I think in the South,
I have so many thoughts. First of all, shame on that mother for saying that to her child.
And that was like a podcast interview. So that's not a video for any of you guys that are listening, because the photo that people have attached to that audio is.
Yeah. I don't care how old your child is. It's never okay. And it is absolutely harming your kid by telling them you have those thoughts. That is horrible to tell your child never to have children, because it ruins your career prospects. Even if you think that, and if you think that and you've had children and you have gone into the workforce or not gone into the workforce and they're grown and you're telling them that, you need to go to church, because that is such a sad takeaway from parenthood. Okay. Second of all, you didn't have that dream was not reoccurring. You maybe had it one time and that didn't even really happen in that dream. I'm sorry. And why?
You don't believe her?
No. Like, we've all done weird. No one. That's so oddly specific. You really stood up and said, I don't want children. I want power. And you had it over and over again. And you also had a mother that told you not to have children.
Do you know what it sounds like to me?
Power.
It sounds like a psycho.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, people gobble this feminist glop up because it reinforces their life choices. But everything she's saying, it doesn't, and I'm trying not to be mean about this, but it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't mean anything. Everybody uses this whole word patriarchy when they have to deal with men about anything. So just because you get married and you have children, you're automatically entered into a patriarchal society. Okay, so since I have a husband, or I go work for a company and a man happens to be in charge. Now I'm in a patriarchal system. No, there's
well,
just
you
men
are
in
a
this
victim, because that way you're eternally a victim. Remember,
that's what I'm saying. It reinforces whatever feminist like fever dreams they have, and it really reinforces their life choices. This poor gal, whether she knows it now or later, and she'll figure it out, or whether she might never figure it out. If she's intentionally making choices to never have children, so that she can have this illusion of faux power for what, a season of her life, and then it's going to be gone.
It's gone.
That is so sad, because I don't know. It just, the whole thing bothers me. The whole narrative bothers me. Tell me she's no more than, she cannot be over 28, 29 years old.
I think she might be 30, 31 or something like that. Like,
yeah,
she's not.
She's still young enough to wear. Like, she's just saying what she was told from her friends that went to like Wesleyan or Amherst or Emerson. And she's just regurgitating all the feminist stuff we've been told. And I think people are actually getting tired of the whole like patriarchy, toxic male conversation. It's so old
she's
and
35.
Overused. That's crazy. to me.
Well, I have another one for you. So
no,
let's watch one more. Just one more.
No.
I do want to ask you about an attack line from Republicans, because this is a comment you made in 2020 about Nashville. It's gotten a lot of attention in the race. Let's listen to this.
I hate the city. I hate the bachelorettes. I hate the pedal taverns. I hate country music. I hate all of the things that make Nashville apparently an it city to the rest of the country, but I hate it.
I know you said those comments were taken out of context, but I want to ask you about it, because I'm wondering, do you think it was a mistake to say that?
Once again, I was a private citizen. Nashville is my home. Do I roll my eyes at the bachelorette parties and the pedal taverns that are blocking my access to my house? Yeah, every Nashvillian does. But this race has always been something bigger. It's about families across Middle Tennessee that are getting crushed by rising prices, while Washington politicians and billionaires argue about this type of nonsense.
No, you said it. You said you hated your city. That's not being taken out of context, friend. You said it. You gave multiple examples why you hate it. You don't like where you live. And now you want to stand there and try and fool all of the residents who live there who do love those things. Like,
well, I mean, and then the other thing is, like, she's on the record, too, talking about defunding the police. In fact, I think she may have been.
Of course she is. Of course. It's a playbook. But it's a playbook that's old. I'm telling you, this whole like feminist defund the police, you know, shout your abortion stuff. It's running out of time. It really
actually
is.
Actually, half of it, because she was asked. So she had made some past comments about defunding the police. Mm-hmm. And then she goes on CNN and is mm-hmm. asked about her comments. And I found it, which I'm glad mm-hmm. I did, because I want to share with you her very dodgy answer.
Crime is, of course, also was a major issue in the presidential election. And I know there are some old posts. You've been asked about those old posts a number of times. My question for you today is whether more money for cops on the streets in the district you hope to represent would help fight crime. Would you like more money for more cops on the streets in your district?
So those past comments were at a time when I was a private citizen, as an activist and organizer. And now as a Tennessee lawmaker, I represent 40,000 individual opinions and political thought.
Right, so what do you think now? Would more money for cops be good or bad?
I think it depends on what the community wants. I've worked with communities, at least my constituents, want to ensure that there is investment in their community for community safety, community protection, mental health services.
That's what cops do.
And that's what I'm hearing from at least my constituents.
I mean, first of all, stop saying I was a private citizen so that like people can't ask you questions. If you're on the record and you're being recorded and you're a private citizen, sorry, it's going to come up. So just like,
okay,
that's
first
not even
of all,
an excuse. What's that even mean?
I said this to my husband. I was like, if you said it as a private citizen, to me, you're saying
that's what
it,
you think the
that's
most.
That's what you think the most.
The most. The very mostest.
And now all of a sudden, you're kind of like adjusting your considerations because are you going to come on, please.
When she says, I said that as a private citizen, that is code for please don't bring that up. I'm embarrassed by that because I have to walk it back now. And it just makes you sound disingenuous and dishonest. So. Well, I hope that they don't elect this gal in. I mean, she has obvious contempt for her city or her district. And,
clearly.
and the latest people who Emerson, are in it.
The latest Emerson poll had them 48-46, okay, with a Bain at 46. Mm-hmm. And everyone, like the Democrats are pulling out the stops, hoping to flip this seat. You had DNC chair Kevin Martin visited. Kamala Harris campaigned for her. AOC
what?
Campaigned for her. Yes. Like
for this gal,
for this chick, for this like specimen of a Democrat.
Well,
okay?
I think at this point, it's a numbers game for them. They don't care obviously they don't care. Look at what happened in Virginia. They just want Democrats in office.
Well, to me, if anything, this is just confirmation that the Democrat Party themselves, like they've put mm-hmm. all of this weight behind her. They could have mm-hmm. really, if they really wanted to compete for this seat, mm-hmm. they could have put up and supported a moderate
Democrat. Yes, they could.
Correct.
Have.
And they may have actually had a good chance of flipping the seat. But
yeah.
She won my guess is that for the primaries, this is who they supported. I don't know where the funding exactly went, but the point is that she won. And they're putting all of their weight behind her. Right now, the reports that I hear out of Nashville or the friends that I have in the Nashville area, yeah. her ads are flooding the area.
Really?
Like, it is, it's crazy. It's out of control.
Well, they want every seat that they can get. It is an absolute numbers game right now. They did the exact same thing in Virginia for Spanberger and for Jay Jones. I mean, I got two flyers in my mailbox a day. It was every single ad on television, on my computer, everything was for those two. When it's a tight race, they're just, instead of trying to find a candidate somewhat virtuous, stands on principle, might, you know, work with Republicans on some things, they're like, no, not that, crazy. Not that.
Yeah, honestly, the elections now lately have been like, who is the least crazy? Okay, now even Speaker now, because they have so much money going in, the Democrats over here, of course, there's a concern. First of all, you don't want to flip the seat. Second of all, in addition to not wanting to flip the seat, considering that Trump got this plus like 22 points, they don't necessarily want this to be close either. Like, they do not want this to come close enough where it enters single digits.
Yeah.
Because then it gives the Democrats a talking point, and it gives them, even if they don't win it, it gives them like a little bit of a
hey, look at what can happen. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that this is a referendum on Trump and the Republicans, and we can maybe ride this wave into the midterms. And even Trump, this is actually really funny. So Speaker Johnson was campaigning in Nashville and pulled Trump on the phone and played it for a rally.
Wow, they're bringing in Speaker Johnson.
Yes.
Wow, they're just like, they're doing whatever.
You,
okay.
This is big deal.
What,
okay.
What day is this? Is this next Tuesday?
Today.
Above all else, today. Number one, she hates Christianity. Number two, she hates country music. How the hell can you elect a person like that? So I just want to give my total support, and he's had it right from the beginning. To Matt Van Epps, he's going to be a fantastic congressman. He's going to represent you so well, and we'll keep our agenda going. And I'm going to make a call tonight about 7 or 8 o'clock. I'm doing a tele-rally for him tonight. So if anybody wants to listen, basically I'll be saying the same things I just said. He's fantastic, and go get him and get out tomorrow morning. Get out and vote, and let's make it a sweeping victory. The whole world is watching Tennessee right now. And they're watching your district, the whole world. It's a big vote. It's going to show something. And it's got to show that the Republican Party is stronger than it's
all right,
ever
President.
Been.
Okay, you can totally see Mike Johnson is like, wrap it up. Let's just, come on.
He's like, come on.
Wrap it up.
Come on,
keep
bro.
It short. You can do
let's
this.
Move it along.
I didn't realize it was today.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving has warped my concept of time.
Now, they've had early voting going, I think, for just over a week now or something like that.
Okay.
So. And a lot of it has been banked. But now, and then also the weather here is really nasty right now. It's cold.
Yeah.
It's wet.
We have a storm right now, too, here.
So this is the one to watch, because there's a lot of talking points that are coming out of this, you know.
Has she made statements about hating Christianity, like Trump said? I didn't catch those.
I have not heard them myself.
Or is he just inferring?
Probably.
Yeah.
I can neither confirm or deny. I have not seen that. I've definitely seen her defunding the police, totally pro-abortion, totally, like, she is pretty out there. Okay.
Yeah.
And I mean, she just looks like,
well, she looks like how she feels. And I mean, if all we have to go off of are the sound bites, I think she's genuinely in a state of like, upsettedness. She doesn't like where she lives. She's lonely. I don't know if she's married or not.
Well, and I think it's really interesting, because another thing that's a big factor, especially for that district because of Nashville, is the amount of transplants that we have come into that area specifically, like to Tennessee as a whole, but especially into Nashville. It could very well make, even though Trump won it by 22 points, it could make this competitive, because there's a lot of people that may have voted for Trump before, but that they're like soft Republicans because they're transplants from these coastal cities.
Yeah.
So that could be changing the dynamic too, which I'm like, okay, now you need to go home.
Yeah.
Yes.
Now you need to go. Okay. So, All right. I know I mentioned that we were going to talk about the Venezuela boat strike, or the double tap gate, which is what I'm talking about. If you guys haven't heard about this, so we all know there's a lot of activity going on the coast of Venezuela, right? Yep. And we have been doing strikes on narco traficantes on boats in the ocean off the coast of Venezuela. Now, there was a recent report in the Washington Post that the very first incident, which is the September incident, was the first strike where Venezuelan boats off of Trinidad killed 9 or 11 individuals on board.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the claim is that dropped a bomb on the boat, it blew up. The boat blew up, but two individuals survived and were holding onto the boat. Then the claim from the Washington Post was that Hegseth gave an order to say, kill them all. Basically, we got survivors, let's kill them all. Now, they're arguing that this is a war crime. I'm not going to get into the discussion of whether or not this is a war crime, because that is not my expertise. I'm just telling you what the story is.
Yeah.
Okay. So allegedly he gave a spoken directive saying to kill everybody. And this is in quotes in the Washington Post.
Okay.
Now, this is what everybody's like arguing and debating. And it's been a little bit of wishy-washy. So like the White House has been kind of denying it. Then they confirmed it, because it was during the White House press conference that Caroline issued a statement, or she read a statement where she basically confirmed that the order was given by an admiral. Is it Admiral Bradley?
Okay.
Yeah. And that then the New York Post this morning did a report. Now, mind you, the Washington Post has a bunch of anonymous sources. Like, nobody's on the record here. Okay.
Okay.
So, and then the New York Times did a report this morning, basically fact-checking the Washington Post,
which
I thought was very interesting. Okay. So, and I want to read directly what they said to make sure that I get it right. Okay. So it says, according to five officials who spoke separately on the condition of anonymity to discuss the sensitive matter that was under investigation, Mr. Hegseth, ahead of the September 2 attack, ordered a strike that would kill the people on the boat and destroy the vessel and its purported cargo of drugs. But each official said Mr. Hegseth's directive did not specifically address what should happen if the first missile turned out not to fully accomplish all of those things. And the official said his order was not a response to the surveillance footage showing that at least two people on the boat survived the first blast. Admiral Bradley ordered the initial missile strike and then several follow-up strikes that killed the initial survivors and sank the disabled boat. As the operation unfolded, they said Mr. Hegseth did not give any further orders to him. Then later in the article, they go on and they say, right here, two officials also said Mr. Hegseth made no oral directive at the meeting that went beyond the written order. The Post article did not provide context on when Mr. Hegseth gave what its sources described as a spoken order to kill everyone. Two officials questioned whether the surviving people were Admiral Bradley's intended target in the second strike, as opposed to the purported drugs and disabled vessels. They argued that the purported cargo remained a threat and a lawful military target because another cartel-associated boat might come and retrieve it. So I thought it was very interesting because the New York Post like directly goes, the Post suggested.
Yeah.
But that's not really what happened.
So we have warring, you know, journalistic enterprises.
Correct. But then also at the same time, you had Hegseth. So after Caroline Leavitt did her statement, confirmed the second strike, and essentially said that Bradley was the one that issued the strike. An interesting detail that a lot of people aren't discovering is that the rules of, like, if something like this were to happen again, were specified and changed after the strike, which is why in later strikes, we've heard of survivors being picked up and like taken back to their country of origin or by the Mexican Coast Guard or something along those lines.
Yeah.
So it almost kind of makes you think like maybe they noticed that it was a problem or they did something wrong or it could be something that they did wrong. Yeah. So let's really be specific about our rules afterwards.
Yeah, it's a little fishy.
So like even though, yeah, and also I was listening to Sean Spicer and Spicer was saying like how the New York Times reported it. He's like, what I'm reading between the lines was, and the guy, this admiral, Bradley, he is like decorated. He has been around for a long time. He was like, he worked with SEAL Team 6. Like he knows what he's talking about. Mm-hmm. And so to make it seem like he just frivolously,
like a willy-nilly like, kind of just
like decided to kill. Let's just drop one more bomb on them and finish them off. He's like, it doesn't sound like something here is incorrect. And he's like, to me, you know, and he was also in the Navy. He's like, to me, it reads like some nuanced, important details are being left out because somebody's out to get Hegseth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, Spicer has a bias, so I have no idea. And I also don't know what the law is here. Yeah. But what I do find interesting is that this is literally dominating all of the news outlets.
Yeah, everywhere.
And the Minnesota fraud is like...
I was going to say, that's convenient. Yes.
Yeah. It's like, now, this one is definitely developing. I mean, I think we remember last time, remember Signalgate with Pete Hegseth?
Yes.
And it went on for like weeks. And like the more we learned about it, the more we realized that it was like manipulated and it was kind of like a nothing.
Yes, correct.
So I mention it today. We're not going into the nitty gritty of it, first of all, because it's not our wheelhouse, but also this is very much developing.
Yeah. And more comes out each day, basically.
Correct. And Bradley is due to testify before Congress behind closed doors next week. And I will say this, there is a bipartisan effort within Congress to learn more about exactly what happened.
Yeah.
So they're not all just like,
oh, it's my team or yeah.
Yeah. Or like, this isn't a big deal. Like everybody's kind of interested to know what happened. Yeah. And, you know, it's also worth mentioning that this was all happening in the context of that video from the Democrat congressman and, you know, saying like, you don't have to follow any illegal orders from the president and, you know, being accused. Like some people were speculating and even Mark Kelly was asked. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah,
he was.
He was on CNN. He was asked like,
did you know something? Order.
I forget what he said.
Yeah, I can't remember exactly how but he was specifically asked about this. Like he was asked like, did you guys put that video out because you already knew of something? And he was like, he essentially said, no, we did not know about this. We only put the video out in case, like, for example, something like this were to happen. So then it's like, well, are you saying that this was illegal? But he would not even admit whether or not it was illegal.
No.
So there's anybody who is like, I saw some left-leaning Instagram account that was like immediately jumping on and saying, the administration committed war crimes.
Yeah.
Flat out.
Well, there's like, tons of people saying that right now.
Yeah. Like, we're going to be honest. I don't know, but I can tell you that something
is amiss.
Smells fishy here.
Yeah,
something is amiss. Yeah. I don't think it's exactly on the up and up. So
no.
Now to wrap us up, let's talk a little bit about Christmas. Okay.
Okay.
Because it's Christmas time.
It is.
And Melania, our very elegant and fashionable first lady. Now, what should I do? Do we want to just watch the Melania video or do you want to revisit the previous?
How long is the Melania video?
I mean, they're both about a minute.
Oh, let's watch both and contrast them. But can we start with Melania's incredible outfit and I'm not a fashionista and I really think there's like a million more important things to talk about in the world. However, she is just very lovely and so classy. And I think that that matters in a sense.
Absolutely.
She came out to greet the Christmas tree when it was being drove in to dropped off at the White House. And she was like in Christmas plaid and a jacket, or maybe it was a cape,
but her
super stilettos that were plaid also that matched her outfit. And I was like, you know what? You're killing it. I would be walking out in my Costco pants and flats and no one would appreciate it. And I just feel like that's a gift she has. You know, we all have our gifts and that is a gift she has to put
oh my gosh,
to put together those outfits.
I would be out in my Costco plaid. All right.
I would.
So who do you want to, you want to revisit the past?
Yeah. Christmas past. The ghost of Christmas past.
Let's revisit the ghost of Christmas past.
Yes.
Okay, that, I actually really like that. I think that is hilarious.
Okay.
Because this is like, I don't know if you guys, for those of you who are listening, if you don't remember, last year, Jill did the Christmas with this tap dancing crew. It kind of reminds me of like what you would expect a teacher to do in her classroom as a class project.
Absolutely not.
Christmas. No?
No, I mean, I don't want a teacher to do that with children in there.
I mean, it's festive, but like this is what we ended up with.
No.
Okay, enough tip tapping. More tip tapping. Let's see. That flower on that chick's head.
That's a guy. That's not a chick.
Oh, is it a dude?
Yes, this is what I'm saying. It's like one big drag show. It is a drag show. That's all it is. Sorry, not sorry. And men dress like animals, like furries. I don't know. What is this?
Crown. I mean, it's very child-centric, I guess.
No, it's very Broadway. It's like...
Yeah.
Like...
It's a dude with a flower on his head.
Yes. It's like overage theater kids dressed in drag. That's what it is.
Okay. So, okay.
There's a reason like why if you showed that video to a random gathering of 10 grown American men that have to go to work every day, they would be like, why does that gross me out? Like, it's ick. It's a bunch of grown theater kids, like, who have worked on Broadway or in musicals their entire life. And it's like a drag show. It really is. Because I think half of the people were men. When you can't tell... Okay, so I don't know.
Well, no. I thought the person with the flower on their head, I thought it was a chick. And then apparently it was a dude. Also, I know you haven't seen this, but there is a show and a video game called The Last of Us. And the premise of the game is that the people, it's like a zombie apocalypse thing, and people turn into like mushrooms, essentially. And the spores and the mushrooms take over your body.
So you're saying that's what that looked like?
There is one of the characters that has like a mushroom thing pop out of their head. Mm-hmm. And that's what it looks like to me.
Yeah, that's it. That's okay.
Let's visit Christmas present, where Melania just shared a video of the White House. And it's very different, I think. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Let's watch it together.
Okay.
It's so pretty.
It is pretty.
Those balls had states' names on them. I don't know if you noticed.
Gosh, that's gorgeous.
The butterflies. This is for her foster Be Best program is what that tree's for, with all the butterflies.
Beautiful. I'm itching my eyes. I'm not crying, I promise. I'm not that.
Those are Legos.
Wait, Lego Trump? Was that Lego Trump? No,
yeah, the Trump portrait is
made of
Legos.
And the George Washington one?
Yep.
Oh my gosh, that's so great. My girls thought it was like diamond crystal art. Like, yeah, you can do that. Oh, it's for the America 250. I love it.
Look at the gingerbread house of the White House.
Oh, I love it.
And a nativity.
Look at that. What do you know?
I didn't see a nativity in Jill's video.
Yeah.
No,
that's
no,
just
no
classy.
Nativity there.
That's all it is. It's just classy. Although I do you got to love the Donald Trump and George Washington Legos, like they're both on these pedestals. Yeah. I was like, oh my gosh, it's so perfect.
Well, because that particular room, I saw a video, that room is supposed to be like for the children, it's supposed to be like the holiday kind of like toy room. And so that's why they had the Lego portraits. And then there was one that is a room for the 250th birthday. And then there is a room for her Be Best initiative and her foster program.
initiative mm-hmm. that she does. So I just thought it was, and the I freaking loved the gingerbread house because they have that mm-hmm. top level open so mm-hmm. you can kind of get a sneak peek into you know, that room and the living space mm-hmm. of it and everything. Yep. So I just thought it was very cool.
It was sweet.
I like it much, much.
Just so much difference. So
it was
actually
funny. A lot of people were like reposting Jill's Christmas.
The dance. Yeah.
And it was like with this like never forget. Don't forget what they did to you.
It's true. It's kind of like the different, like you have the Easter celebration, you know, with Biden kind of wandering around aimlessly and the Easter rabbit, Easter bunny having to be like, come, let me guide you, you know, as opposed to this year's Easter egg roll where Trump and Melania are saying hi to the kids and they're coloring with them and they're just very with it, you know, and they do this for basically like everything. They're like, look at what it was and look at what it is, you know.
It's actually been interesting because, you know, he just had that MRI results were released mm-hmm. yesterday. Yeah. And there was a lot of speculation about him having an MRI. The New York Times last week did this ridiculous article basically speculating that he was just completely falling apart, failing in health. Mm-hmm. The Atlantic just did this whole one where they're comparing Trump from today of Trump from 2016 and kind of commenting on how significantly different his travel schedule is and everything. And I'm thinking to myself, like, but where, what, like, I, okay, like, obviously.
If you're telling me that he was more busy 4 years ago than he is right now due to age, then what the heck were you guys doing 4 years ago? Because I didn't hear about him being this
crazy.
That's
my point.
4 years
like,
ago.
We all know, like, nobody's saying that Trump is not getting older. We all acknowledge he is getting older.
I look different than 4 years ago. I'm more tired than I am 4 years ago. It doesn't mean that I'm not effective in what I do.
More tired
these people
than I
have
yesterday, like,
nope, these people have nothing better to talk about than that. But, I mean, even he gave his, he's in his, what you call it right now?
He's in the cabinet.
Meeting.
He's still.
The cabinet meeting, right? He's still going. And I have people in my Twitter feed being like, oh my gosh, look at, he just fell asleep. I prayed for his health. He looks so sick. Blah, blah, blah. I'm like, come on, guys. The man works like 17 hours a day. Of course he's tired. Like, what do you expect? Let's not try and make it into a terminal diagnosis. You know what I mean?
I you know, like, what I find so interesting is that we know he is older than he was before.
Yep, that's how time works.
All of these pieces, what drives me nuts is all of these like think pieces of seeing mm-hmm. like how he's just falling apart and how he's showing his age. Okay, yes, we all are aware. It was also obvious, significantly more obvious when it was Biden and nobody was saying, only a handful
anything.
Of people were saying anything.
I know.
So. Yeah, let's just, I'm
with
you. Am I concerned? Not yet.
Nope.
I just be honest, not yet.
No.
Okay.
I'll
let you
know when I'm concerned. And clean bill of health comes forward from his physician every time and there's nothing concerning. I'm like, what do I have to be concerned about?
I just saw this meme of, you know, when Willy Wonka, the original one where he's coming mm-hmm. out and he's like with his cane.
Yeah.
And then he just like
he does a
somersault and pops up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I saw that with Trump's face superimposed off.
Yeah, it's true, though. But I think we can agree that Christmas is classy. It looks nice. Even Halloween decorations look nice. I mean,
Absolutely.
There was just whoever they have doing their photo ops, their decor, just basically their press agent for all things visual is just knocking it out of the park.
Knocking it out of the park, yep. For sure. This administration definitely has the visual, mm-hmm. like,
on
game,
lockdown.
Social media game on lockdown.
Yep. Yep.
We just need to figure out who the lady is that's hitting send for all of Trump's tweets.
Thank you for reminding me. That is what I'm going to do right now when we hang up.
Yep.
Yep.
All right. Well, I'm going to go ahead and wrap us up for today's episode of Rivera and Reeves. If this is your first time here, welcome. You have found your new favorite podcast. Make sure you hit that follow button no matter where you're listening. YouTube, Substack. Where else are we? Oh, your favorite podcast app. We're just kind of all over. Am I boring you, Rachel?
No, I'm just so tired. My baby was up with a nightmare last night and I cannot hold in my yawns. Sorry.
Okay. Here's a reminder. We will be here again on Thursday and then we are taking a month off and we will be back for season two of, well, technically, I guess season
three.
Yeah, season two, season three. It depends on when you want to start counting. But the next season of Rivera and Reeves will be back January 6th.
Sixth. Epiphany.
Yes. I keep repeating that in my head.
Yes.
I'm like, sixth.
So if you want to consider becoming a paying supporter where you get bonus episodes, you get early episodes, and you support our little podcast, please consider clicking the link in the show notes to our Substack and become a paying supporter. In the meantime, I think that's it. We'll see you again on Thursday. And here's a reminder that the media is trash and we have no tolerance for it. Okay, bye.
Bye.